So now I'm obsessed with time. Come on, tell me about the time. Had it all in my head tonight. Had the time of my life when the words
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on another episode of
American Timelines. I'm Amy.
And I'm Grover Cleveland's.
Nope. That's Joe.
Franklin pierced his nipples?
No.
I'm
that's
Joe.
Stupid.
That's funny. It's great.
That's really
Franklin
stupid.
Pierce. You know who that is?
Worst thing ever.
I'm Joe, and that's Amy, and welcome to episode 5. Is that right?
Yeah.
I'm losing count already.
It is. Boy, it's 5.
We are. It's just a smashing hit.
We can't count to 5. We're going to have to write these numbers down before we.
It's the drugs.
It must be.
It's the epidural.
Epidural.
I have an epidural.
You have one right now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You just got one tonight?
I got it for the podcast.
That's
thought it'd make it
interesting.
More interesting. Now some people like smoke a little weed before they do things. I like to do an epidural.
That's weird.
But
I can hear you slurping.
Yeah,
in
it's Hop Slam. I want everyone to know I'm drinking Hop Slam. So welcome to episode 5.
Episode 5.
1990.
Still alive.
And this one we're going to cover the year 1994. 1994. A few corrections and apologies.
Corrections and apologies.
Corrections. Could you sing that?
Corrections and apologies.
See, that sounded good. Now I can use that each time.
Kind of
like I did
cheese
the
ball.
Corrections and apologies. Corrections and apologies. Yo, you liked that last time, didn't you?
Nope.
Okay, so just a couple things I had. There might be more, but I sort of hastily wrote them down this time because really nobody's listening, so who cares? Number one, Moises Alou was who I named when you told me to name 7 Blue Jays. I said Moises Alou. I just like saying the name Moises Alou.
Yeah.
He was never a Blue Jay. I even looked it up because I thought maybe he was a Blue Jay for a second because a lot of guys play for multiple teams.
Nope, you were
like
wrong.
Like Ricky Henderson has played for every single team. Moises Alou was not ever a Blue Jay, and I didn't ever think he was. I just like saying Moises Alou.
I think you totally thought he was.
Does he ring a bell to you at all, Moises
Alou? I've heard the name.
But do you know why you've heard the name at all? It was a big thing that he did that you is probably one of the only things in baseball you would have heard of.
Was it, did I ask him to for where the bathroom was in a bar?
No, that was Minnie Minoso, which you did that. You did it also, you did that. Our Cubs great, Brian McCartney was appalled because you were like, hey, can I get some cheese fries over here? Or whatever it was.
And it was.
Can I order some food, you jackass? He's like, that's Minnie Minoso, what are you doing? He owned a bar in Chicago that we were in, and Amy didn't know who it was. I didn't know it was him either, but Brian recognized him. I was very embarrassed. Jeez. No, Moises Alou was part of that Cubs, they almost made the World Series, but Steve Bartman.
Oh, yeah. He was the one that was going to catch it something?
He was the guy who went to catch it, and Steve Bartman
I do know now.
Took the ball away.
I forgot his name.
So that was Moises Alou. So he would have caught the ball Steve Bartman stole away.
But that's not the year we're talking about.
That's not the year we're talking about. Get back on track. Talk about 1994. Now, there's more corrections and apologies. Because 1994 was the numbers on my varsity jacket. Because that's when I graduated high school, mm-hmm. baby.
Corrections and apologies.
Number two, Soul Asylum. I said, number two, I talked about the Beastie Boys concert I went to New Year's Eve, 92, 93. Went on and on about it. We edited most of it out, so thanks to my wife.
25
minutes. It was a great story. If you ever want to hear it, hit me up at historyforjerks@gmail.com, and I'll tell you the full story. Because I left out some things. One particular thing is I said we weren't in the front row anymore. We were still in the front row. We just weren't front row center. We were all the way to the right. Anyway, I said that Collective Soul opened for them. I meant to say Soul Asylum.
Okay.
I don't know if I know the difference between those two.
Yeah,
bands.
I don't either.
They both, I really don't, I have no idea what the difference is. I can probably look it up, but I'm not going to because who gives a crap? Somebody out there does, and they're very
upset. They're really mad.
I wonder if anybody likes both of those groups. And another group that opened was called Brotherhood Recipe. I remember that. They were a local group. So I wonder whatever happened to them.
Corrections and apologies.
Number three, I just wanted to say Purple Crackle again.
Yeah. I just want to say that.
I didn't really have anything, although I did look it up online just because I was curious.
Right.
The only thing I found on it, there was an article somewhat recently that the Purple Crackle became a gentleman's club.
No surprise.
Yeah, so it's not a meat market dance club anymore. It's a gentleman's club now.
Corrections and apologies.
Number four, I mentioned the TV sitcom Room for Two, and I said it starred Linda Lavin, which we paid most attention to Linda Lavin and how great she was. But yeah. I realized that I called her co-star Marsha Heaton.
It's Patricia Heaton.
It's Patricia Heaton. Yeah. And so Marsha and Patricia sound the same kind, I guess. I mean, I don't want to make excuses.
Well, yeah, you do. But you're trying to.
But do any of us really care about Patricia Heaton, really? No.
There's somebody out there who's a big Patricia Heaton fan, and they are pissed.
You know what, Patricia Heaton fans? Guess what? I don't want you as a fan of American Timeline. So
hey, now.
If you're listening right now and you're a Patricia Heaton fan, no, I'm just kidding. We want Patricia Heaton fans. In fact, I want to market this to the Patricia Heaton fan club.
Do a maybe hashtag or whatever.
Yeah, and maybe we'll get big enough where Patricia Heaton will. Did I say Marsha Heaton again?
Patricia Heaton. You said Patricia.
Patricia Heaton will maybe come on our show someday.
Yeah, maybe.
When we have a touring show, like tour show featuring opening act Patricia Heaton.
Would say, babe.
And she'll write a song called My Name Is Not Marsha.
All right. Corrections and apologies.
I listened back to last episode, and I didn't realize I need to listen to you more. When I was talking to you about Yokozuna, and they were all taking turns trying to body slam him,
yes.
I realized by your questioning now, I must have missed your question then or how you said it. You didn't know what a body slam is. Like, because you said, oh, they slammed their bodies into him? And I just missed you saying that, and I just went on. I just took it for granted.
Oh, they throw them on the ground.
Yeah, that's what a body slam is. They pick somebody up and they slam their body on the ground.
Important distinction.
Yeah, and I honestly just assumed that all human beings
knew what a body slam.
Just knew what that was.
Well, maybe it was.
You have not watched a single minute of wrestling.
No,
you've never watched a wrestling pay per view.
I refuse.
You've never watched wrestling?
No. I take that back. In the 70s, I watched Wrestling at the Chase. It was on right after Tarzan on Sunday morning.
That's a
TV
show?
It was one of the five channels that we had, and it was in
St.
Louis.
In St. Louis. Yeah. Local, right?
But it was
Iceman King Parsons?
Yeah, exactly.
So why did you watch it?
It was it was the only thing on that wasn't a religious program. It's Sunday morning, and there's five channels. So what else are you going
to
do?
So wrestling to you is, I hate it, I detest it, but it's better than religious programs.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So the bottom of your barrel is religion. Religious.
Jerry Falwell.
Right before that is wrestling.
Yes.
That's pretty good.
All right. What has happened in 1994?
Oh, geez, God. Why do you have to ask me everything? 1994... It's a great year. I graduated from high school. I became a man. I turned 18.
Yeah.
I slept with over 17 women.
All right.
Just kidding. No, I became a man in 1994. I was class president of my senior class. Boom.
Prom king.
In your face, Crystal Alexander. No, she was president every single year, and then I
usurped her throne.
Well. Because in fifth grade, I lost class president.
We're getting into a big personal story again.
I was still bitter from fifth grade, so I wanted to take it away. I wanted to do that, so I got signatures or whatever. And Crystal was mad. She said, you don't even want to be president. You just want it because it's a popularity contest. And I was like, well, maybe that's true. But I became class president, and I regret it ever since. Because now all I got out of the deal was I have to plan all the class reunions.
And that's kind of to make what you get. Class president once,
yeah,
and you have to plan every class reunion.
I know,
and that's not true.
Bullshit.
That can't be true.
Well, there's only nine people in my class.
What about the other years that they were the other class president?
I don't know. Crystal doesn't want to anyway, so she's probably glad. She's probably like, "Ooh, dodged a bullet there. Yep. Idiot boy ran for president.
And that's right.
Took that stupid responsibility away from me. So I'm gonna give it back to her. I'm gonna resign. I'm gonna see if I can resign.
Do that.
Can I resign in shame, like Nixon?
1994.
Let's go back. Let's take our American time machine.
Yes.
Our American timeline time machine back to 1994. You like that? Ladies and gentlemen, we were lucky this episode. We scored an interview with world-renowned factologist, Mr. Armand Crisp.
Yes.
So, ladies and gentlemen, welcome Armand Crisp.
It's great to be on American Sidelines.
No, Timelines.
American Timelines, yes.
Course,
welcome,
of course,
Armand.
Of course, American Timelines. Thank you for having me, Grover and Ami.
Oh, Grover, thank you. He called me Grover.
I heard him.
And nice to meet you too, Ami.
Amy is fine.
Amy?
Yeah.
It's spelled A-M-Y?
Yes.
Ami, right.
No,
I'm sorry. Where I'm from, we pronounce that Ami. I apologize. Amy.
That's
Amy.
Okay.
All right. It's good to meet you, too. I have some wonderful facts for you today about the year 1994.
Sweet.
Right? Oh, really? Great. Great. What can you share with us?
Okay. Well, a lot of people, excuse me, may not remember this, but what? Oh, my God. What? That's huge.
What's the matter? Is something going on?
It's right on his asshole.
Oh, excuse me, Armand.
Can you take him to the vet? We can't afford the vet. Hi, Amy.
Mr. Crisp.
I apologize. It's just some business.
Is everything okay?
In my house. Don't touch it. Do not. Don't. Don't touch it. Do.
Mr. Crisp, is this a bad time?
Do not touch. No. No.
It sounds like there's.
Do not touch it.
Listeners, sorry. Okay. Armand Crisp is renowned.
We're fine. I just had a little problem with our family dog. We're okay.
Are you sure? We can do this another time.
1994. I told you we can't afford it. No, they're not paying me. They're not paying me. It's some rinky-dink American sideline.
I wonder if we should.
I don't know. Okay. All right. I'm on the phone. So, I have this, 1994 is when Pulp Fiction came out. And I have this wonderful story about Samuel L. Jackson and John Travolta, which I don't think anybody has ever heard. Okay, so, express it. It tells you to express the gland? How do you even know what it is? I don't even know if it's a gland. Don't touch it.
I'm going to barf.
Oh, my God! This is a lot of pus.
Mr. Crisp!
Give me a glass of goddamn water!
Jeez!
Oh, my God! I'm sorry.
Mr. Crisp, are you okay, Mr. Crisp?
Oh.
Armand, did we lose him? I think we lost him.
Oh, my goodness. I guess it was a bad time.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. We'll try to get Armand Crisp back. ladies and gentlemen, I don't know. I'm not sure what happened to him.
It's something really bad.
Yeah, maybe it was a bad time. Maybe we'll check back with him next episode.
Okay.
1994.
Tanya Harding, the antagonist, and Nancy Kerrigan, the protagonist, ice skating rivalry resulted in some friends of Tanya, including her husband, Jeff Galooly. Galooly and associates, Sean Eckert and Shane Stant. I don't remember hearing those other names. Attempting to bust Nancy's kneecaps at the U.S. Figure Skating Championship. She had to withdraw, but did well for herself with endorsements and winning the silver medal in the Olympics in 1994.
Yeah.
And that's funny. That happened in 1994, and now it's big again this year.
Yeah, because that movie.
There's a movie.
The movie.
What do you know about that movie?
Anything? I've just heard it's good.
What's the name of it?
I, Tanya.
And it's like, is it supposed to be like, I, Tanya, swear to?
I have no idea.
Is that why it's called I, Tanya? Or is
maybe.
It like, does she become a robot? Like, I, Tanya.
No, she's not a robot that says I, Tanya.
No, you're like, I, Tanya, like, I, what's that, I, robot? I, robot, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Remember
I thought you were talking about Audrey.
No, our daughter said I, a robot one time
when she was little.
Because I would always pretend to be a robot. But no, I thought it was from like the movie I, Robot.
Oh, right. I got it.
I, Robot. Like,
no, I don't think it's that.
Tanya Harding becomes a robot and then destroys Nancy Kerrigan or something.
No, it's definitely not that.
And yeah, this was great. I mean, I didn't really know anything about ice skating before that happened, but it was a kind of a, oh man, what the hell did they do? The crowbar? What a crazy thing.
I didn't see it because I don't watch the Olympics, as we've covered already.
Me neither.
I saw that.
But you know, you heard about it. Yeah, remember they just kept showing her going, oh my.
Why did she?
Why?
Why? She's crying.
Why? And it was such a big thing. But here's a weird thing is I don't know if it's just my life or the 90s in general, but I look back on that and it just like that and OJ, everything just screams white trash to me.
Yeah. Tanya Harding.
Yeah.
She was.
It was like. Were the 90s just white trash, or was it just I was white trash in the 90s?
You were white trash in the 90s.
So it's just like everything is white trashy. Like everything I remember is white trash. Like I just like a big heap of white trash.
Wait till we get to the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
You think the 90s are white trash?
Maybe we should change the name of this podcast to White Trash Timelines.
Yeah, really.
Let's talk about what us two white trash people remember.
Yeah.
I mean, you're definitely white trash.
You were poor white trash.
Yeah, I still am white trash.
Yep.
Anything else about the Tanya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan thing? Hugh Devine was a good friend of ours. He worked with Amy, and he was he a facilities guy?
Yeah.
Facilities guys are always great. Wherever you work, make friends with a facilities guy and just talk to him because you'll get funny stories. So Huey used to say about Nancy Kerrigan, what would he say?
She could eat an apple through a picket fence.
Yeah.
So, well, he would say, she could eat an apple through a picket fence, that bitch.
Yeah, he would call
that's her, how he would say
he would say that bitch.
Everything. He was Archie Bunker on speed.
1994.
Uday Hussein, son of Saddam Hussein, oversaw the imprisonment and torture of Iraqi athletes who were deemed not to have performed to expectations. In one case, imprisoned football players were forced to kick a concrete ball after failing to reach the 1994 FIFA World Cup finals.
Ouch.
Isn't that crazy? That's nuts.
That's terrible.
Well, he was a terrible person.
1994.
The top song of 1994 was I'll Make Love to You by Boyz II Men. When you want me to, and I hold you tight.
No,
baby.
Bad.
Oh, I'm seducing you right now. No, all through the
that's
night.
That's a terrible song.
Girl, relax. Let's go slow.
Right.
I ain't got nowhere to go. I don't know how you don't love Boyz II Men. What's wrong with you? Why did I marry you? Big movies were Forrest Gump, The Lion King, and True Lies. You're a big Forrest Gump fan, right?
I remember
everybody
all those.
Forrest Gump is great.
I do like Forrest Gump. I had Henry watch it.
Yeah, it's great. It's still great. Yeah. It stands up. Doesn't it?
Yeah,
holds
it does
up, doesn't
up.
It? George Foreman Grill was released in 1994.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
That long ago.
I didn't know this happened, and I barely remember this guy, but TV host Ray Combs. Remember him?
Yes.
From Family Feud?
He was in some kind of a sexual... something, right?
Oh, right. There was something about him being in a... Is that
maybe,
him?
Yeah, maybe not.
Anyway, Ray Combs. There's a lot of weird... If you look back at everybody that hosts a Family Feud...
Something
like,
weird
a lot
happens.
Of things. A lot of people got killed and killed themselves and
that's
stuff.
Right.
So something might have happened
I think Ray
him.
Combs killed himself.
Ray Combs might have, but this isn't about that. This is about his last Family Feud episode. It ended with a contestant zero in Fast Money. Combs told the contestant, "Thought I was a loser until you walked up here. You made me feel like a man." Combs then walked off during the end credits and drove home without saying goodbye to anyone. He had been let go prior to the episode taping.
Oh, my gosh. So they let him go, and then he had to go on?
And then he had to go tape, yeah. So he just called somebody a moron and then left. I like that kind of.
Yeah.
1994.
According to his biography, Kim Jong-il first picked up a golf club in 1994 at North Korea's only golf course. And shot a 38 under par round that included no fewer than 11 holes in one. Satisfied with his performance, he reportedly immediately declared his retirement from the sport.
1994.
Oh, this is cool. You'll like this.
Okay.
Miss Hate Sports. Nobody won the World Series that year.
Oh, wow.
You want to know why?
Why?
Why? What do you think?
Because it rained. They couldn't play.
So in your mind, you think it rained one day and they said, let's cancel the whole World Series.
All right. I was joking.
You were?
Yes, I was joking.
What do you think?
I don't know. It was a tie?
No. You think it's just like they just never ended the game?
I don't know.
No, I'm asking you because I didn't think you'd ever imagine this would happen, but there was a strike.
MLB strike.
MLB Players Association.
Not like
was
a
on
baseball strike.
No.
Like
no,
a
player's strike.
A player's
strike.
They were
on strike, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, but what I don't know is why some years. They get scrubs that cross the picket line. Maybe somebody
scabs,
not scrubs, scabs, which who are scrubs.
Yeah,
true. And TLC don't want them.
No.
And other times they just don't play. So they probably couldn't find anybody across the picket lines. But I remember there was years in football when all the terrible players played, and so there's a Super Bowl.
Well, football they don't have the ethics they do in baseball.
You don't think? You think they have more ethics in baseball?
Well, there's less.
They play 165 games, so they got
to
be all coked
up. It seems like there's less crime with baseball players than football players.
Maybe. Super Bowl champs for Dallas Cowboys. NBA champs Houston Rockets. I know you love sports. I don't care about hockey. New York Rangers. Nobody cares. No. Remember Andre Agassi?
Yes.
You loved him. He was like a U.S. tennis guy then.
I didn't love him.
You thought he was hot.
No, not really.
Cheated on me with him once.
No, definitely not.
You want to guess who won the Kentucky Derby that year?
Nope.
You don't even want to guess what the horse's name was?
I would never know. I would never, ever, ever know. What is it?
Gopher Gin.
All right. What's next?
1994.
A 75-pound bag of cocaine fell out of a plane.
Whoa.
And landed in the middle of a Florida Crime Watch meeting.
No way.
Yeah. How cool is that?
That's pretty funny.
1994. I never heard about that.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I was playing on stage with Lothario in my high school.
So thinking, think about, you're sitting there at the Crime Watch meeting.
Crime Watch meeting.
And a giant bag of cocaine drops in the middle of the meeting.
And if it fell out of a plane, think of the velocity by the time it gets to the ground.
Yeah, it's a rocket.
Man.
It's a crack rocket.
Crack rocket. I like...
You have a crack rocket.
Yeah, a lot of ladies tell me that. They like my crack rocket.
1994.
The Good Times virus, a fraudulent virus warning that first appeared in 1994. The email claimed that an email virus with the subject line Good Times was spreading all kinds of computer problems.
Oh, I don't remember anything about that.
I don't think I even had email in 94. Like, I didn't have email until college. I don't know about you.
Yeah,
Did you even have it in college?
Near the end, but very, very end.
I can't even fathom that we didn't even have an email. Like, people look at me crazy when I tell them we didn't have a cell phone. Like, we couldn't text in college.
We didn't have car phone even.
And yeah, we called them car phones. Anybody who had a cell phone was a car phone. It was a rich guy. Yep. What we would do in 94, if we saw somebody on the highway with a car phone, we every single time we did this, it was without, we didn't even have to talk about it. We just all did it.
Yeah.
All my friends took our shoe off and put it up to our head and pretended like we were talking to them.
That's stupid.
Now, every single person in the world has one.
And is talking on the phone while they're driving.
I would be lost. If I went back in time in a time machine to 94 right now and they said, okay,
you wouldn't know what
to
do with your
thumbs. You have to go live in your 18-year-old life for a year. I would, I would be like, what's going on? I don't know what's going on. What's going on in the world? Where's Twitter? What's going on? How do I get a hold of anyone? Yep. What do I do?
True.
I'd be panicked. I couldn't do it now.
1994.
David Crosby was the recipient of a highly publicized liver transplant in 1994. Do you remember this?
I do remember something about this.
I bet you didn't know this.
What?
It was paid for by Phil Collins.
No.
Yeah.
Why was it paid for by Phil Collins?
I don't know, but news of his transplant created some controversy because of his celebrity status and his past problems
with drug
and alcohol addiction.
Yeah.
So he gets a... You know, he gets a...
Be first in line.
A new liver, but he ruined his liver with alcohol, and everybody's mad.
1994.
You'll like this one. This is still... This is weird. You're going to, like, dream about this.
What?
Oakville, Washington experienced a rainstorm in which gelatinous blobs fell onto a farm.
Ooh.
The blobs were examined and found to contain human white blood cells, but
they
did not contain nuclei, which is something human white cells have.
Yeah.
So they had human white blood cells without nuclei, which isn't possible.
So it won't be a human white blood cell then, will it? Won't it be something
That's a weird thing. They said human white blood cells have that, so they were like white blood cells of something. Theories persist, but none have been proven correct.
Huh.
They were human white blood cells, but they didn't have something that all human white blood cells have. So they were like, and they fell from the sky.
Yeah, that's weird.
You know, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
What in the hell?
Yeah.
What the hell is that?
Yeah.
What the hell is that?
Well, I never.
I can't believe that's a thing that happened. Like,
I can't imagine the cause of something like that.
Yeah. So
happening.
I'm going to think about that for a while.
Yeah.
1994.
So, you know, I briefly mentioned that the New York Rangers, and I quickly said nobody cares about hockey, but there are people that care.
Yes.
But this makes it
More
interesting. The champion New York Rangers got drunk and left the Stanley Cup at a strip club.
And left the Stanley Cup?
You know what the Stanley Cup
trophy?
Is? Yeah, the big giant
at
trophy.
At the strip club?
Yeah, they got drunk and went to a strip club, and they left it there.
Oh,
the last
Lord.
Guy, Charlie, you got that, man? You go that, man?
Really.
It's like 7 in the morning. You got that?
Idiots.
Yeah, they left it there.
That's what they get.
1994.
Colombian soccer player Andres Escobar was murdered by the Galleon gang for accidentally scoring a goal against his team in the World Cup.
Oh, my gosh.
In the World Cup.
He was murdered?
He was murdered.
Wow.
He was murdered by the Galleon gang.
1994.
A Russian pilot for Aeroflot Flight 593 let his 15-year-old son and 12-year-old daughter try to fly the aircraft.
That's always a good idea.
Yeah. That's nice. They were having a good time. The kids unknowingly disabled the autopilot. The plane crashed into a hillside in Siberia, killing all 63 passengers and 12 crew members.
Well, there you go.
My question on that is, how do they know that's what he did?
Well, they got the black box.
The black box told you that, you think?
Why can't they make the whole plane out of the black box?
That's what I've always wondered.
That's not
Is that a comedy
joke.
Thing? Is that a joke from somebody else?
Yeah, I don't know.
Louis Anderson, maybe?
No, but it's I've heard it. Yeah. I think it's a trope.
Seinfeld?
Something.
Sounds like a Seinfeld thing.
1994.
On June 17th, a white Ford Bronco belonging to O.J. Simpson's friend Al Cowlings was watched by the entire nation since it was carrying a now fugitive O.J. Simpson who was holding a gun to Al's head.
That's not what they did in the movie.
A note from O.J. sounding like a suicide note was read to police by his lawyer. Do you remember where you were? When the chase?
I was at Flat Rock, North Carolina. I didn't know anything about it.
You were in North Carolina?
Yeah.
Oh, and you didn't have TV there.
I didn't know anything about it.
You were in were you there for a Summershock theater?
Yeah. And I called my mom, and she said, did you hear about O.J.? And I was like, O.J., who? O.J. Simpson, the football player? And
did you even know who he was then?
Yeah, I'd heard. Yeah, he's been in movies and stuff. Yeah. And she told me, and I was like, what? That's bizarre.
So you didn't see the chase or anything?
Nope. I missed all of it. I missed that and I missed the Macarena. Both of those things happened that summer. And I'm like, what?
What in the world happened?
What is this dance?
I remember watching the chase on television. My big thing was, he's going real slow. Just catch him.
Yeah.
Just cut him off. Like, he's going slow. I didn't know the whole bit about having a gun against Al Cowling's head. I think I was just like, I don't understand this. Is it because he's a celebrity? They just follow him slowly, or what's going on?
So you didn't know his wife was murdered or anything?
I think they did say that his wife was murdered and stuff. And
but you didn't know that?
But more I remember about the verdict. And when the verdict came out, I remember exactly where I was. I skipped class.
I do remember that.
Steve Bishop and I skipped. We were in school then, right?
Yes. And they brought a TV in.
Did they?
Because I worked in the bookstore, the school bookstore.
Oh,
and they rolled in a TV, and everybody, the whole campus was watching the TV.
Watch the verdict?
Yep.
And did you guys celebrate?
No.
You were very upset?
We just couldn't believe it. Nobody was mad or anything. We just were shocked.
What? Yeah.
Because everybody thought he was going to go to prison.
Well, Steve Bishop and I, we celebrated. Because, like, we loved him in Naked Gun.
Yeah.
He was, like, a hero of ours. And we really were just like, you know, they're just trying to frame him. And we heard, you know, all the racist
police
stuff.
Yeah, you hear all the racist stuff came out.
And so we were, like, high-fiving each other. And, like, yes, he
got
off.
And now you probably feel awful.
And, well, I don't know. I don't really know. We still don't know what really
happened. Oh, give me a break.
Okay, we probably do, but.
He totally did it.
My thing is, you should be able to, there should be a formula. Like, however many touchdowns you got, you should be able to kill that many amount of people.
No.
I'm not saying one per touchdown. I'm saying if you scored 100 touchdowns.
No, that doesn't give you
any. One person. You get to kill one person.
No.
If you get 200 touchdowns in your career, two people.
No, that's insane.
No, you should be able to kill one person.
No.
One. As long as you get 100 touchdowns.
No.
He had a lot of touchdowns. He was a really good player. He was great on Naked Gun. So
I don't care. He's an awful person.
Well, I mean, it's just murder.
He's a wife abuser.
Yeah, well, I don't like that. But
you don't care that he killed her?
Well, not her. You should just kill, like...
Nobody. Mm-hmm. Nobody.
What about, like...
No.
Hate groups?
Nobody.
Okay. Nobody should die?
Nobody should die in this podcast.
Yeah, but what if you score 200 touchdowns?
No.
Can't you kill anyone?
No, and you can't have it regardless, so...
Well, I'm never going to score 100 touchdowns. I never scored one.
So, see?
I almost did once in... junior varsity game.
All right, what's next?
Carry the ball all the way down the field.
You always get back to your high school years.
Somebody gave it to somebody else for the goal lines.
All right.
Damn it.
1994.
Brief celebrity marriages. Michael Jackson and Lisa Marie Presley got married briefly.
That's right.
And there's a joke about that later. Richard Gere and Cindy Crawford.
Yeah,
remember that? I remember not liking Richard Gere very much because... You know, every single guy thought, well, I have a chance with Cindy Crawford.
Yeah.
So I hate Richard Gere. He's taking my woman away. Cindy Crawford was everything.
In 94, yeah.
In 94, she was the beginning.
She was in that George Michael video where they're in the bathtub.
And she was in those Diet Coke commercials that her mole, everyone wanted to lick her mole.
That's gross.
No, it's not gross. She was the perfect human.
Well.
Oh, my God, Cindy Crawford. I mean, it was Cindy Crawford this, it was Cindy Crawford that. Ask Drew Connolly, friend of the show, Drew Connolly. He's an Irish fool who lives in Florida. Loves Cindy Crawford. Wouldn't stop talking. Cindy Crawford.
Okay.
So, sorry.
Quit yelling and screaming at me about it.
Cindy Crawford. She was the everything. Every guy.
All right. We get the picture on
Cindy
that.
Cindy Crawford. Anyway, and then Richard Gere. We have to, can't mention Richard Gere without talking about.
No, we're not talking about gerbils. We're not doing that. No.
Gerbils?
We're not doing that.
We're not going to even bring it up?
Not even for a minute.
We're not bringing it up right now?
Not even right
now. This isn't talking about it? The gerbil?
Nope.
So you think it's not true?
Let's move on.
You're not even going to tell me if you think it's true or not.
It's not. Okay. It's not.
It's snot.
1994.
Oh, there's four deaths.
Okay.
You know how we have the comedian.
Yeah, there's the airplane deaths.
Accident death.
Yeah.
These are all different kinds of deaths.
Okay.
I'm going to give you all four.
Okay.
And if you can guess any of the four.
Yeah, what do I get?
You get to murder one person.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Rock and roll death. No, I'm going to say them all before you guess.
Okay.
Rock and roll death. Serial killer prison death.
Oh.
Beloved comedian death.
Ooh.
And disgraced politician death.
Well, Kurt Cobain.
Yes, he is the rock and roll death, right? Suicide.
And then.
That was tragic. He was great. Nirvana was awesome. Even though I couldn't remember Kurt Cobain's name last episode, it's not due to his not being great. It's because I couldn't remember. Nirvana is awesome. Gosh,
all right.
They're still going.
What were the other ones?
Serial killer prison death.
94.
Yeah, you know this.
Was it John Wayne Gacy?
It was a subject of a previous podcast.
Oh, Bundy. No.
Our previous podcast, episode
Dahmer.
Two.
It was Dahmer.
Jeffrey Dahmer
that's
was murdered
right.
in 94. Yep.
Why didn't I know that?
I don't know. I'm really disillusioned.
Yeah,
and,
I know.
And I'm also disappointed.
I know you're
dejected.
Bloom is off the rose.
I don't know if I can
What
go
else
on.
Was it? A comedian?
Every rose has its thorn. The beloved comedian death.
Oh, Phil Hartman.
No.
Oh.
Not yet. That was later.
Okay.
Because I remember where I was on that one, too, when I heard that. This one, I'm still upset about.
Chris Farley?
No, better. Same size, but better.
Jim Belushi?
No, same size as Chris Farley. Size.
I thought you meant physical.
No, yeah, I did. Weight size.
Oh.
Jim Belushi was.
John Candy.
Belushi was, yeah, John Candy.
That's right.
Gosh, I still wish he was alive.
Yeah.
And the last one, so you finally got.
What's the last
three.
One?
I don't know if it's murder. I had to lead you to that one. So I don't know if you get to murder anybody.
I know. Well, you said if I got one right, I could, though.
I did?
Yeah, you all said
right.
if
who
I
do you
got
want,
any
Well, who do you want to murder?
I don't want to murder anybody.
If you could murder somebody.
It would probably be you, honey.
Ah!
No, I'm kidding.
Boom. This is recorded for history.
And I know.
If I'm dead, everyone, listen to this episode and convict her.
That's
it
right.
It was her.
Yep.
I tell everyone everywhere that you threaten
I leave notes around the house that say,
oh, me too.
If I'm found dead,
my work computer is filled with Word documents that just say Amy did it.
So whoever dies first, the other one's just going to go to prison.
Yeah, that's my goal.
That's
my goal. I don't care what happens. I want you in prison, and I want our kids raised by Marley Matlin.
All right, what's next?
Disgraced politician death. You didn't guess that one. I can't.
Nixon?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I didn't know he lived to 94.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I thought
that's crazy to me.
Earlier.
1994.
REM's 1994 song, What's the Frequency, Kenneth, slows down towards the end because bassist Mike Mills had an appendicitis attack and had to be rushed to the hospital.
Oh, and they liked
They chose to keep it.
Really?
Is that crazy?
That is crazy.
I didn't know that was a thing.
1994.
Green Day joined the lineups of both the Lollapalooza Festival and Woodstock 94, where the group started an infamous mud fight. During the concert, a security guard mistook bassist Mike Dirnt for a stage-invading fan and punched out some of his teeth.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, isn't that great?
Whoa. That's a little overkill.
I like that happened.
1994.
October 1994.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pulp Fiction, Forrest Gump, The Shawshank Redemption, The Lion King, and Jurassic Park were all in the theaters at the same time.
Yeah, those are some good films.
Yeah. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Those were all really good. I remember Pulp Fiction being...
Oh, that was one movie, though, I didn't want to see ever again after I saw it.
Yeah, you don't really need to see it again, except that...
there's so many really disturbing scenes in that.
1994.
Did you know that the late River Phoenix was supposed to be the interviewer in Interview with a Vampire?
I did not.
But he died, so Christian Slater got his role.
Christian Slater's kind of a tool.
Well, you might change your tune when you hear this. Christian Slater donated his entire paycheck from the movie to all of River's favorite charities.
Oh, that's lovely.
It's kind of nice.
Yeah.
I never saw that movie, did you?
Yes.
I did not give a shit about a bunch of vampires kissing each other.
It was one of the most poorly casted movies, because I really, really liked those books.
Because of Christian Slater? Oh, there were books first?
No, it was Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt that played the vampires.
Tom Cruise fucking sucks.
Tom Cruise does suck.
I mean, let's just go on record. Can we just get this out?
Yeah, Tom Cruise sucks.
Tom Cruise not only sucks, he's insane.
Yeah.
He's a brainwashed, crazy person.
Yep.
I mean, he ruined our Katie Holmes. And I say our, for I say this for the people of Toledo, Ohio. She's our person. She's ours.
Not ruined. She's better than ever.
She is better than ever, because guess who she's with now, you know? You know who she's dating?
No.
Jamie Foxx.
Oh.
You take my money.
Oh, that's
when
awesome.
When I'm in need. So screw Tom Cruise. She got away from those crazy Scientologists. Great. Now Scientologists aren't going to want to listen to our podcast. Oh, great. So we've lost the KKK.
Yep.
We've lost Scientologists.
Missouri.
Everyone in Missouri. what was the other one? Patricia Heaton fans.
Yep.
1994.
Adam West, Clint Eastwood, and Burt Reynolds were all offered the role of James Bond, but turned it down.
Oh.
Liam Neeson turned down the role in 1994 because he didn't want to be in action movies.
And then he became a big action movie person.
Yeah. That's crazy.
1994.
Stella Liebeck. Mm-hmm. Stella Liebeck sued McDonald's after spilling hot coffee in her lap.
Oh, my God.
Leaving her with third-degree burns.
That's right.
Liebeck initially sued for $20,000 to cover her medical and living expenses, but the jury ultimately awarded her $160,000 plus an extra $640,000 for punitive damages.
Good.
Now, that's a lot of money.
Yeah, but...
So, I don't know if it's worth that, but I spilled McDonald's coffee on my wrist one time.
And it peeled the skin immediately off.
Immediately, the second I was walking in the front door... or the back door of my house. It had a screen in the front, you know, so I was carrying two coffees and a bag of delicious egg and cheese biscuits, and I'm trying to open the door, and the top comes off the coffee.
Yep.
I squeeze it a little bit as I'm opening the door with my hands full, and the coffee comes out onto my wrist.
And
immediately,
yeah,
the skin is gone. Immediately, my skin is just gone.
Yeah.
And it's... I'm looking at red flesh.
Yep.
Like red, like several layers of skin is just gone, and it's bleeding all over the place. I have to drop all the McDonald's and instantly put it under ice. And I was just like, holy shit. I mean.
Yep. And so we.
I'm not saying everyone should sue McDonald's,
but then
coffee should not take several layers of skin immediately off your flesh.
Do you remember looking up that case after that happened and seeing the pictures of her injuries?
Oh, and she spilled it on her. She spilled it on her sweatpants. She was sitting in the back seat in between two other people, and they passed it back to her, and she spilled it on her lap, and her sweatpants like kept it against her skin because they were soaked. And so It burned for until she could get out of the car, get pulled over, get her sweatpants off.
Yep.
So I had it for a second on my wrist.
I can't imagine.
And panicked and put it underwater immediately. I mean, the sink was right there.
Yeah.
She had it all over her legs, and this is an old woman.
Her legs and her crotch.
And it stuck to her crotch.
Mm-hmm.
So, and back then, I thought that was frivolous and it was ridiculous.
I remember
thinking that
too.
Who's this idiot suing McDonald's? Yep. Once I got some McDonald's, and this was in 2006 or something, or
yeah,
seven.
It was a lot later than
it was. They're still doing that.
Yeah.
Coffee does not need to be that hot.
1994.
Cost of a Super Bowl ad in 1994.
$900,000.
You're exactly right. It keeps going up by $50,000.
Yes, it does.
You're a Super Bowl ad genius, is what you are.
It's not really a very fun game, even.
Yeah, it's stupid. I don't know why you say it every time, but I'm keeping it in. Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time on American Timelines to take a
deep dive.
All right. So,
deep dive.
We're on July 13th.
Yes.
Of 1994. What was going on July 13th?
Oh, so we talked about Jeff Gillooly.
Yes.
He was sentenced to 2 years
on July 13th. Okay.
And O.J. Simpson was charged with murder, and he gave hair samples for testing on July 13th.
Okay.
Bill Clinton was the president. Angels in the Outfield was the number one movie. Also, The Client with Susan Sarandon and Tommy Lee. Mm-hmm. I didn't see that. All 4-1 was the number one song. I swear.
Oh, God.
In the moon.
No more.
Warren G. Regulate. Riders, mount up. Or something, mount up. Regulators, mount up. That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Janet Jackson, anytime, in any place, I don't care. Lisa Loeb and Nine Stories. Remember that? Stay.
Oh, yes.
Because I missed you.
Ugh.
Those glasses.
Mm-hmm.
Ace of Base, don't turn around.
Uh-huh.
Never gonna see my happy man. Is that what I say?
Yeah, I guess.
And on television this night, on TV this night, July 13th was a Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
CBS was The Nanny.
Yeah.
And after The Nanny was a show called Good Advice, which I researched this night, had no idea.
Yeah.
Do you remember this show?
No.
Shelley Long, Treat Williams, and Terry Garr.
No.
It was only on for two seasons. Shelley Long was a...
You remember this?
No, not at all. Okay. That's why I had to research. I was like, what is this? Shelley Long was a successful marriage therapist and the author of a best-selling book on the subject. Upon returning from a six-week promotional tour, she discovers her husband of 11 years, Joey, played by Christopher McDonald, in bed with another man. Furthermore, when she returns to her therapy office, she learns she is now sharing it with high-profile divorce attorney Jack Harold, Treat Williams.
Oh, love is in the air.
Yeah, while Susan and Jack don't agree on the basics of relationships, love or marriage, the one thing they do share is an undeniable sexual chemistry. They were trying to recreate Sam and Diane, and it was not a success.
No.
On ABC that night was The Dinosaurs, The Critic, Home Improvement, and Grace Under Fire with Rhett Butler. Remember her?
Mm-hmm.
Fox had 90210 when The Models, Inc. happened.
So just after 2 a.m. on July 13th,
yeah,
police were called to a crime scene that was a triple murder.
July 13th, so the morning of July 13th.
Yeah, at 2 a.m.
So
it was a crime
before all those shows were on.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It was a crime that would take them 10 years to bring to
police
justice.
Police were called where?
Bellevue, Washington.
Bellevue, Washington.
Yes. It was the Raffay family. And
could you spell that?
R-A-F-A-Y, Raffay.
Raffay.
Raffay family. So
triple murder.
Yes. So huh. I got a lot of this information from the 48 Hours website. Okay. Maybe. So the story begins July 13th, 1994, with a call for help. Sebastian Burns and his friend, Atif Raffay, had stumbled onto a horrific crime scene. Atif's parents had been found murdered.
Atif Raffay?
Raffay. R-A-F-A-Y.
Atif is the
Atif Raffay, okay. Yes. His parents had been found murdered.
And
he's with his friend Sebastian.
Okay.
So Sultana Raffay, Atif's mother, had been the first to be killed. And Sebastian tells them he saw her lying on the floor.
So he comes home from
They come
somewhere?
Home. They both come home from the movies.
At 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
Already suspicious.
And Atif's father, Tariq Raffay, was the next to be murdered. And he
Wait,
was...
Is it two boys that come home?
Yeah.
They're both boys that
yeah,
come home and discover
both boys.
This murder
yeah.
scene.
And the father had been up in the bedroom, and he had been bludgeoned like 30 to 40 times. Oh. Like, it was overkill. It was...
Yeah, so that's a...
His head was
I'm picking
just
this up, because you're making me watch this stuff. That makes you think it's a crime of passion.
Yeah,
somebody
be.
That knows him.
Yeah,
strangers don't bash somebody over the head over 30 times, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm putting together.
Or
here.
It's a... Or it could be... I mean, we'll get to this. I mean, it could be... There's other things, too. That
okay, there's
be.
Other things that are coming up, but... But that's not out of the ordinary for me to think
right.
that.
It's not.
So you're saying I'm a great detective.
So as the boys waited for help to arrive, a third victim,
oh,
Atif's...
Wait, how old are these boys? Do we know?
They're 19, I think.
They're 19?
Yeah.
Year old boys? So they're like after high school, but...
Yeah, before college.
Yeah.
Atif's sister, he had an older sister with autism.
Oh.
And
how old is
she was still alive, and she was moaning in the bedroom.
Oh, no. She's at the house.
She's at the house, but they didn't check on her. Like, they went in, and they found the place.
They found the mom and dad.
They found the mom and the dad.
And the place was, like, trashed.
Sort of, yeah. Sort of, yeah. And
sort of, yeah.
I'll get to it.
Ugh.
But the sister was in the... They could tell she was alive, and she's, like, moaning in the bedroom.
But she was injured.
They didn't go... check on her. They just called 911, and then they went outside and waited
because they saw the parents dead.
Yes.
Called 911,
went outside,
heard the sister.
Yes.
But continued to just
go outside and wait for the police,
but not talk to her or anything,
right?
Because
so
she had autism.
I don't know. She died at the hospital a few hours after the attack.
Something ain't right.
And the police chief said it would make sense that she was murdered last because everybody knew she couldn't make a 911 call.
So she was pretty severe.
Yes. Autism. Yeah. So the Raffaes had just moved to Bellevue from Vancouver, Canada. The mom had a doctorate in nutrition, and she was a stay-at-home mom.
Okay.
And Tariq Raffaes was a structural engineer who had worked on buildings around the world.
Oh, so they had money.
Mm-hmm. So they couldn't figure out who would take the lives of this quiet family and spare the life of their only son. So the detectives started to look more closely at the crime scene.
Yeah, I already think it's the son.
Well, in the 911 call, Sebastian, who's the friend,
right,
said there was a break-in when he reported
so
what had happened.
So he's the one who called?
Yes. He had said there was a break-in. He said, just looking at that room, the detectives said, just looking at that room, you start realizing it looks like someone set it up. Boxes were tipped over and drawers were open, but nothing appeared to have been gone through. So it looked like it was
a staged. Son. We know it.
A staged crime scene.
Because you're not going to not check on your sister whether she has autism or not. I mean,
Right. That's a weird thing.
Yeah, unless you're a horrible person.
So then that night, when police asked what was missing, Atif said two things, the disc, his Walkman and a VCR. And
so he says the only things missing are his Walkman, which was $29,
and a VCR.
And a VCR, which were expensive in the 80s, but by 94, they weren't that expensive anymore.
Right, and the detective thought someone murdered three people and took his Walkman and VCR. That doesn't make any sense.
You're not going to break into a rich person's house and take a Walkman and a VCR. Yeah. VCRs were more, I mean, obviously now they're not worth anything, but then they were maybe $150 or something. But
still.
Not.
So detectives looked into who these two boys were. Sebastian and Atif had been best friends since high school. Okay. They became very good friends because they were both really intelligent, precocious.
Murderers.
They were smart asses. They were both smart asses.
Smart asses.
Sebastian was raised in a loving family with English roots and grew up playing classical cello. He was very smart.
That's the
intellectual.
Friend.
That's the friend. Yeah.
To this day, I've never trusted anybody who plays the cello.
I used to play the cello.
Oh, shit.
Yep.
We're getting to the root of our marriage problems.
Sebastian became a member of the Royal Canadian Air Cadets and was given an award by Prince Edward. And Atif attended Cornell University.
Prince Albert? Did you say
Prince
Albert?
No, Prince Edward. I did. I didn't say that at first.
You know what a Prince Albert is?
I do know what that is, yes. It was the summer of their freshman year of college when their lives took this unexpected turn. So
they were freshmen in college.
Police took the two to the station where they were examined for traces of blood, and they found nothing.
No blood on them.
No, nothing.
They were separated and questioned separately. You know.
Yes, and when asked where they had been that evening, they provided a full account. At 8:30, they drove to a restaurant to a bite to eat.
Friendly's restaurant, probably.
Then they went to a 9:50 showing of The Lion King, and then after the movie, they stopped for a bite to eat and left the waitress a $6 tip on a $9 tab.
You know, it checks out that The Lion King was out then. So.
Right. Well,
but why would you give a $6 tip on a $9 tab?
Well, it's like what the police started.
What do you get for $9?
Police said that everywhere they went, the people who had contact with them remembered them. They were.
So they hired somebody.
They were making it very obvious that they were at these places.
Yeah, right.
Yes, like leaving a giant tip, and then they complained about something at the movies and all of this stuff.
Up their trail while they're murdering.
Something else, the trouble police were, how could Sebastian and Atif provide so much detail about where they had been that evening but not recall key moments at the murder scene? Then they got even more suspicious when the two boys were spotted at a local video store renting movies the night after the murder. So they put them up in a hotel, and they went out and they rented movies.
Yeah, so you're in a hotel because your family's just been killed.
And you rent a
and
movie.
You're going to go watch.
I mean, maybe there was nothing else to do. I don't know, but.
But you think about it, back then when you had to rent a movie. You're not going to a Redbox.
No, I know.
You're going to a
video store.
Yeah. Gasparri's Pizza Video.
That's right.
And you're getting pizza, and you're getting a video. No, it just doesn't check out. Doesn't check out.
So the police pressed the boys further. They wanted to know why Atif didn't help his dying sister, even though he heard her through the bedroom door.
Yeah, that's my big thing. Is he didn't even check on her? That's bullshit right there. I don't care who you are.
3 days after the murders, relatives of the Raffaes gathered in Bellevue to bury the victims. But the only surviving member of the immediate family, Atif, was nowhere to be found. He was on a bus headed across the border to Canada with his best friend, Sebastian.
Boom. So, now you know they did it.
So they go, and Atif claimed that nobody told him his parents were going to be buried. and then what he told him about the funeral, but there's a Muslim rule that you have to be buried, like, I think it's 3 days after a funeral, but maybe Atif didn't think it would happen since it was a murder or something, but...
He did it.
So in Vancouver, the boys...
Joe Splain did it.
In Vancouver, the boys were out of reach of the Bellevue detectives and an investigation that targeted them for the murder of the Raffet family. Their sudden bus trip across the border only raised more suspicion, even though they were both Canadian citizens. So this detective thinks that they're guilty.
But he
just doesn't have enough evidence. They went in, they searched the house. They found no forced entry. They did a luminol test, which is the stuff that shows up blood. They did a luminol test.
Like blood that's been cleaned up,
yes.
You mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And they showed an enormous amount of blood on the shower walls.
Was cleaned up?
So the killer had used the shower before leaving. It was traces of blood. So it was the killer that used the shower.
He killed his family, man.
So.
We know he did it.
They thought, is that why the boys didn't have a trace of blood in their hair, their hands, or anywhere on their body?
They showered together.
So they didn't have any physical evidence against the boys, but the detectives started to build a case based on their odd behavior following the murders. They cooperated. They did everything that was asked of them, but they had this air and this attitude about it. They're real snotty, and they're real unlikable.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes them murderers, but it's real hard to like them.
I go through life assuming everyone who I meet that's unlikable is a murderer.
Yeah. Well, they honed in on their demeanor at the crime scene and questioned why they sat in front of the house if they believed an intruder might still be there.
Yeah, you don't check on the sister. You just let her die or whatever. You don't even look at her.
And then
wait in front of the house.
And police also couldn't make sense of why Atif would notice that his Discman and his VCR were missing throughout the whole house, that he just knew that those two things weren't there.
Yeah, he just came back from the movies.
On the advice of a lawyer, the boys decided to stop cooperating with Bellevue authorities. So they start digging, and they found some other stuff that was kind of dumb. Like, they had been in a high school play called Rope.
That's a terrible play.
About two kids that commit the perfect murder.
Oh, that gave them the idea?
That's what the police thought. I think that's a little bit of a stretch. I mean, I think of all the plays we've been in and stuff.
I've actually done every single thing that was in the plot of every play that I've ever been in. So cops are good.
As the investigation continued, the boys... They bought BMWs for themselves.
Oh, well, shit.
And they rented an apartment.
Make it more obvious, a-holes.
Like, was the money from Atif's parents' estate is what they
used. Of course, yeah. Does this famous thing have a name? Does this have a name, this murder? They all have kitschy
names?
Franklin Park 3?
No, they didn't know. It doesn't.
It sucks.
So...
Maybe
they,
we can name
they start
it
living at an apartment with another high school friend named Jimmy Miyoshi.
Oh, God, I hate Jimmy Miyoshi, man. That dude is nothing but trouble.
So
they move in with Jimmy Miyoshi.
They hid from the media. They're
still in Canada?
And the media is constantly pursuing them in the story.
I thought everyone in Canada was cool.
Then the RCMP, the old Royal Canadian Mounted Police.
Oh, it's like the Mountie. Remember I told you about the wrestler that Sergeant Slaughter fought that was Canadian?
Well, they decided to get into the mix. On April 10th, 1995, the investigators intercepted a phone message that confirmed that a salon appointment with Sebastian. Sebastian's going to go get his haircut.
April 10th of 95.
So they were Canada's most famous teenage murder suspects, but they wanted to make a screenplay about best friends accused of murdering a family, and they thought
we're going to get off.
Yeah, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police had this tactic that they would use to get confessions from people. They called it the Mr. Big tactic. As Sebastian left the salon, a stranger approached him asking for a ride to his hotel. The stranger then took Sebastian to a bar and bought him a drink for his trouble. He gave him like $100 or something to drive him to his hotel. And then Sebastian told the stranger that he and his buddies had written a screenplay. Sebastian said he didn't have a job and needed financing, and then the stranger said he knew someone who could help. The goal was to get Sebastian to meet with the next guy up the chain. So this is all like a sting operation.
Right.
So
sounds like
Sebastian thought he was about to meet a connected businessman, but he actually met with this undercover sergeant. The RCMP, which spent months preparing to manipulate their target, posed as professional mobsters and set up their first meeting with Sebastian in a strip club.
So he's meeting with mobsters thinking they're going to fund his movie?
It's all a setup. The guy that met him was really an undercover cop, and then they introduce him to the next guy up the chain. And Sebastian, so the crime boss told Sebastian he had cash to invest in his screenplay, but Sebastian would have to earn it. And Sebastian had no idea, however, that he was being offered work in a make-believe world of crime. So jobs were also promised to Atif and Miyoshi, and it would be things like running, you know, laundering money or just these like
fake
crimes.
And they thought it was real mobsters.
They thought these were real mobsters and these were real crimes, and they were getting paid. So Sebastian's first assignment was to transport a stolen car from the for the crime boss for $200. Then Sebastian and Jimmy Miyoshi went from one bank to another laundering money. And then for that day's work, they were paid $2,000. So months go by, and the undercover operators took Sebastian to all these posh hotels, trying to build his trust and draw him out.
Yeah.
And they slowly start bringing up the topic of the investigation of in Bellevue. And they try to draw Sebastian out by telling him he already knew what happened. So he's got the big crime boss, and he's like, you know, we need to build trust between the two of us, and we need to know what really happened, but we already do know.
The motivation to tell it, yeah.
And
holy shit.
Sebastian doesn't admit to guilt, but confides in the mobsters that if the police did find something to tie him to the crime, he might want that to be destroyed. And so Sebastian's confident his movie's going to make millions if he's suddenly proven innocent. So the guy tells Sebastian that the Bellevue police have physical evidence tying him to the crime, which is not true.
Which is not true.
And to make it real, Haslett shows Sebastian a phony memo on Bellevue police letterhead detailing the evidence linking Sebastian to the murders. And I mean, they had it on the in the media too. They had it. So it's really elaborate.
So it's really believable. Yeah.
So the mobsters offer to destroy the so-called evidence, but they need Sebastian to tell them exactly what happened in the Raffet house the night of the murder.
Oh, man.
And, you know, he's been denying and denying it. And finally, on July 18th, 1995, 1 year after the murders, Sebastian meets Haslett at the Ocean Point Resort, and the cameras are rolling. And he walks into the room, and he takes off his shoes, stretches out on the love seat, and at that point, he lets his guard down. And he starts to confess. And later, he would say that the guy, because the guy's really pressuring him and really pressuring him and not threatening him, but they know that they're dangerous, supposedly dangerous mobsters.
Right.
And so
you'd think it would be. Polly Walnuts and all that.
He said that he told them what he thought they wanted to hear. But the police are like, no, this is your confession.
But he confessed.
But he said he made it up because he thought that's what they wanted to hear. So then the next day he brings Atif to the crime boss to tell his story, which was recorded on an undercover tape. Sebastian, Atif, and Miyoshi were arrested, but the case is just beginning. Sebastian says he was lying. Undercover officers had intimidated him into making the confession.
Huh.
But no sooner were they arrested than the same Canadian government that set up the trap to catch them led an international battle to spare their lives. Washington wants them to be extradited, but if they go to Washington, they'll face the death penalty. And Canada has abolished it and doesn't want to extradite them because of that.
Gotcha.
So, finally, the prosecutor in Seattle agrees that they won't seek the death penalty. So they, now 25 years old, they're finally extradited to face the murder after 6 years of legal wrangling. So it took 6 years of all this legal wrangling across the border. Mm-hmm. They finally get extradited to face the murder charges. So they get this team of attorneys that believe they're innocent. Teresa Olson, who's a public defender, but then guards at the King County Jail report seeing her having sex with Sebastian during an attorney-client meeting. So then she gets kicked off the case.
She's banging one of the dudes?
Mm-hmm.
Is he that desirable, do you think?
Well, I don't know.
Like,
no, not really.
Women just can't control themselves?
But so his new attorneys were this Ivy League dream team. They were among Seattle's best and most expensive criminal defense
lawyers.
When
you say Ivy League dream team, do you mean Greg the Hammer Valentine and Bruce the Barber?
No, that's not what I'm thinking.
They were the dream team.
So by September 2003, Sebastian and Atif had been in jail for more than 8 years, charged but never convicted for the Raffet family murders.
Really? Never convicted.
It would be up to the Supreme Court Judge Charles Myrtle to decide if Sebastian and Atif's chilling confessions
Charles Myrtle comes walking
would be
through.
Allowed to damn them in an American court because it's illegal. That Mr. Big thing is all illegal in America.
The whole thing they
setting
did
them
to
up because it's entrapment.
It's entrapment.
And
but
it's illegal here.
I like it. I don't know about you, but I like it. I want to move to Canada.
But
free healthcare, y'all.
The Superior Court judge ruled that it would be admitted into evidence. So it was a controversial ruling, and it allowed their own words to be used against them. But while the confessions may be shocking, the defense says they're not true. So finally, in November 2003, more than 9 years after the Raffaele murders, they get their day in court. They ask the detective to retrace the boys' drive home from downtown Seattle, where they were seen that night. The drive timed out to 18 minutes. And 18 minutes would leave 3 minutes for them to be in the house before calling 911. And the prosecutor said that's not enough time in the house to find the bodies and do all the things that Sebastian and Atif told police they did.
Yeah.
Pull the family car into the garage, enter the home through the garage, discover and comprehend that
before they went to the movie. So they did all the alibi stuff later to make it clear.
No, well, they think they snuck out from the movie.
Right.
Came back and killed him and then went back to the theater.
To the movie. That gives you 2 hours, yeah.
That's a little bit, I don't know. So,
smart is what it is. It's smart.
So
I'm taking note of that for next time I want to murder somebody.
So they, but it wasn't just the murders. In that 3 minutes, they also needed time to figure out there'd been a burglary and that a VCR and a discman were missing. But the defense's claim of the boys' innocence is bolstered by testimony from neighbors on both sides of the Raffaele house who heard sounds coming from inside the Raffaele house at a time when the boys had an airtight alibi at the movies. The prosecution argued even though the boys were going to see the 9:50 movie, there's no proof they stayed. The defense argued that even though it could have happened that way, there was no proof it did. Prosecutors were grasping at straws to get a conviction.
You know what you do? You interview the kids about the movie The Lion King. Like, how did it end?
Yeah, really.
And what are the characters' names, brah?
They did have a surprise witness that was a friend from the boys' high school days who had once dated Sebastian. She claimed she had a late-night conversation with both of them years ago where they talked about murder. They planted a seed for murder or something. He said he wanted to kill somebody someday.
Oh, boy. I mean, you got to be pretty low down to murder your own parents, man.
Yeah. The judge didn't let the jury hear that testimony. So it had been years since Miyoshi had seen his high school buddies. He had moved to Japan and was living under another name when prosecutors forced him to return to Seattle and face his friends at their murder trial.
Man.
He was once also a target of the RCMP, who believed he had helped his friends plan the murder. They had wanted him to give a full confession on tape, but he had refused to implicate his friends in the murder for the Mr. Big thing.
Huh.
But back then, he said his friends were innocent, but he got increasing pressure. He eventually agreed to cooperate, and he was granted immunity from charges of conspiracy to commit murder. So then Miyoshi began to reveal more to the police about what he knew, but you didn't know what he was going to do. So then he tells the court that during a drive from Seattle to Vancouver, Atif first mentioned the idea of killing his family. He recounted a discussion about how the boys would commit the crime, and they said they'd use a baseball bat. The prosecution said Miyoshi consulted on an especially chilling part of the plan. Sebastian and Atif visited the Raffaele family 5 days before the murder, and that was no coincidence. It was part of the plan. So they had found Sebastian's DNA in the shower, but he had been staying there for 5 days, so it would have been in there anyway. And fingerprints and all of that stuff would have been there.
Would have been everywhere, so he can't prove that he washed all the blood off him.
But Miyoshi finally did say Atif watched while Sebastian bludgeoned his family. But Sebastian denies ever discussing a plan to murder the family with Miyoshi, and he says Miyoshi didn't have a choice but to testify against his friends because they were going to give him life in prison. So the experts analyzed the patterns on the blood on the wall and found drops everywhere except in one area where there was no blood, indicating that another killer may have stood there during the attack. And they also said a pillow was moved during the bludgeoning. Then they thought there was a third killer who was in the house too because of the blood spatter evidence. So there was some evidence there was three people that were involved.
Well, Miyoshi could have been the third. I think.
But eventually they were prosecuted. They were convicted of the murders of...
They were.
Yes, they ended up getting convicted.
They go to jail?
Yes, they're in jail.
They're in jail right now?
Yep. They went back to court in 2004 to hear their sentence. They both got three life sentences to run consecutively.
Huh.
And there's a Netflix show called The Confession Tapes that I was saying that was supposed to be good, and one of them is about this case.
The Confession Tapes.
Yep. And so that is so check out Netflix
if you'd like to support us. $10 million a second.
One of the alternate theories is that the dad was a Sunni Muslim.
Yeah.
And was very outspoken against the Shia community. And there was a couple other murders that had happened that were very similar months before that were religiously motivated. And so there was talk that maybe it was something like that.
Wouldn't that be terrible if they were in jail and all they did was see a movie? And
yeah, and they're just guilty of being idiots.
Yeah,
and
I mean, the only thing I thought that would make me think that possibly they're innocent is that I would think if they're in that mob life, I would think they would admit it sooner.
Yeah, it took a long time for them to admit
because
it.
Because I think they'd be like trying to earn these mafia guys' trust. Yeah, we murdered. I would think they would do that sooner.
Yeah.
But still, if you're going to leave your sister with autism just to, I mean.
Unless you're just an asshole and you don't care about her.
Yeah, then I guess you deserve to be in prison. Maybe, well, I don't know. Yeah. Nobody deserves that. But unless a running back who scored 100 touchdowns wants to put you in prison, then that's okay.
All right, we better wind this up, babe.
Yeah, it's pretty boring. No, one thing I want to add is July 12th of 94, because that was July 13th.
Yes.
At 2 in the morning. So that day, while they were at the movie, Tommy Dreamer teamed up with Terry and Dory Funk Jr. to take on the Public Enemy and Hack Myers. And then the Tasmaniac also fought Jimmy Superfly Snuka in ECW.
I'm glad we know
that. That was really big. That was Extreme Championship Wrestling, so I want you to know that.
Okay, well, that's important.
Well, it is important for you
to
know.
Important
to my life. Well, it's for you to realize Jimmy Superfly Snuka is really the key that brings us all together.
All right.
So anyway, they were convicted, and I think maybe you and I should go visit them in prison and talk to them.
I don't think we're going to do that.
Okay, so check out the show on Netflix. What's it called?
The Confession Tapes.
The Confession Tapes on Netflix, and thank you for joining us for episode 5, 1994 of American Timelines.
Get out of here, Chuck Berry.
Get the hell out of here, Chuck Berry.
Confession to the challenge, baby, I blow it. I can sing you a song, but you already know it. And you know it's okay if you think it's a shame, because a record pump on me by Michael Caine. The ladies of the 80s, they've been treating me fine. I don't really care if I'm a few years behind. I stood in the studio without an idea. I'm living on royalty checks from Korea. And the record company backed my cocaine. The record company backed my cocaine. The record company backed my cocaine. The record company backed my cocaine.
Everybody's Got One by Matt Truman Ego Trip. Available at Amazon.com.